And now, Sports Day with Jared Healy and Sam McClure for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6, Wheels Car of the Year, and Red Energy. Moving house? Call your local energy retailer. Red Energy.
You can't pick players off a computer screen. That's what I'm saying. There needs to be a process with their recruiting and their list management, but there hasn't been because, correct me if I'm wrong, I'd like to know one positive list management move they've made in the last 4 or 5 years.
The stories coming out of the club about the relationship between the coach and the players are disturbing. I'm hearing more and more about players just being a bit disenchanted. It's just a bit of a worry to me. I'm not saying David Noble's gone. He's only a season and a half.
But in trouble.
But I think he's got a lot of work to do to win back some players.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. Well, the disenchantment Caro spoke of at North Melbourne seemed to play out further this afternoon, with National Recruiting Manager Mark Finnegan and Head of Player Personnel Glenn Luff walking out of the club mid-season. It's a worrying turn of events for the Kangaroos, who currently sits 17th on the ladder with just one win against the COVID-hit Eagles. They were much better last week against Melbourne, it's got to be said. But mid-season walkouts point to a much, much bigger issue than wins and losses. Scoop, a disastrous day for the Kangaroos. In a word, absolutely messy. But there's more than two people walking out. You've got more information. Welcome to you.
Hello, Jared. Yeah, I don't think disastrous is too dramatic a word right now because I'm just reading the AFL record and under the North Melbourne page, the headline is excitement building as a new era dawns. Now, if you look at their recruiting department, which is five men deep, three of those men on the same day
another one
have walked out. Mark Finnegan, the national recruiting manager who's gone to Hawthorn. Glenn Luff, who for the last 3 years has been their list manager. We know his title has changed in the last couple of months. And Ben Berthasol, who was the one that wasn't in the club's statement, who was their recruiting officer. All on the same day, all a week and a half away from the mid-season draft, have left the footy club. It's a day where we're asking more questions than we were of North Melbourne.
Well, fortunately, Brady Rawlings, the North Melbourne GM of football performance, is not far away from joining us. But before we do that, let's welcome the man from the North. Welcome to you, Lee. You're always difficult when you're on the bottom of the ladder, and it's rare that you see mid-season walkouts, though.
It is the old saying, when it rains, it pours. Not much is going right for the Kangaroos at the moment, is it? And this is just, it's a very just unusual timing, isn't it, really? I mean, people come and go at the end of seasons. We know that for one reason or another. But for those three people to pack the bags and leave the club halfway through a season means there's a fair bit of discontent behind the scenes there, one would think.
Jared, as you just mentioned, there are a couple of different GMs of footy at North Melbourne. The GM of footy performance is Daniel McPherson.
Yes.
The GM of footy talent, who the recruiting department answers to, is Brady Rawlings, and he joins us live on Sports Day. Brady, we really appreciate your time. The obvious question is, why would all three decide to leave today?
Well, it's been happening for a couple of weeks and discussions since. It's not quite right that all have made a decision today. So I'd like to put that out there straight up. That's untrue. And all three are in different situations. We've had Ben Berthasol, a recruiting officer, he's been studying over his time at the footy club. He's wanted to get in HR. He got an opportunity presented to him 2 or 3 weeks ago from a recruitment firm, and he's decided to take up that opportunity, which is a great opportunity for Ben. It's for what he's been studying towards for a number of years now while he's been working with us. So it's not entirely true what you spoke about at the start of that segment.
So which bit isn't true, that the three of them haven't left at the same time?
They're all three of different scenarios. So we've got Mark Finnegan's been approached by another club, which he's been weighing up that decision for 3 or 4 weeks now. And I've been in constant contact with him working through that.
Seems very coincidental, Brady, that it all happened in the one day. What was the reason Glenn Luff left?
So Glenn did inform us today of his resignation. So he's a great operator, Glenn. Loved his time working here with me and for us. And he's decided to pursue other opportunities. So that's probably more of a question for Glenn than for me, Jared.
So is it a happy recruiting department at the present time? Because it seems extraordinary, Brady, that three people leave on the cusp of a mid-season draft, and apparently they've all tendered their resignation as operative as today.
Yeah, so on the cusp of the mid-season draft, we're really well prepared for that. There's nothing that's going to change between now and next Wednesday that's going to affect anything we do for mid-season. Obviously, we'll be picking in the first couple of picks, given our ladder position and our one-list spot that's free. So we've gone through the interviewing stage, the football assessment. We're really well placed there. So that won't be affecting anything that we do for next week.
So, Brady, can I just ask you, so North Melbourne fans would be sitting here listening tonight thinking we're 1-9 after we've probably watched our team go backwards rather than forwards in the second year of a rebuild. And the criticism, or the strong criticism, certainly in the media, I mean, you would have heard the comments of Kane Corns last night, has been around the recruitment. And, you know, more than half of your recruiting department have left. I take it on face value that they're all three separate situations, but midway through a season is not an ideal set of circumstances for a team that is trying to go forward and not back.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever an ideal timing for when you lose staff. It's always a challenge. We've had two staff members that have been approached, one through another AFL club and one through a completely different industry, which he'd been studying for. So Ben 100% went with my blessing. I've been working with him around that. He's in his early 30s. He hasn't had a weekend off during a footy season for 12 years. So I totally get that he'd like to look at a different opportunity in a different industry. He's unfortunately went through the COVID period where people have been stood down and stood back up and back to part-time, given the nature of the soft cap cuts. And he's probably looked at a more stable environment being in a recruitment firm rather than a football club.
Can I take you back to Kane Corns' comments last night on Footy Classified? Just take a listen.
You can't pick players off a computer screen. That's what I'm saying. There needs to be a process with their recruiting and their list management that there hasn't been, because correct me if I'm wrong, I'd like to know one positive list management move they've made in the last 4 or 5 years.
So pretty savage stuff from Kane, saying you're only picking guys off a computer screen and no process behind it. Can you convince the North Melbourne fans that that's not as simplistic as it sounded?
I think we all know that, Jared, except for probably one person. So, there's that much that goes into picking football players. The amount of games our scouts go to, the coverage across the nation, whether it be underage, state leagues, in all different states, school football, and that's just the football assessment. Obviously, there's a lot more to football than the way he plays football. Yep. There's the character side of things, which we interview, we do background checks in schools, in jobs, just like every other club does. And clearly, Kane hasn't seen how a football environment works in that area.
Brady, can I just ask you a question? On the sort of chart in the media guide, there's a few people there with GMs of this, GMs of that. Who is the head of football? Are you the head of football at North?
So, Lee, the role's changed a little bit at certain clubs, and you see some of the most successful clubs have split the role. It's a big job. And so we've made the change to split it into two roles. One's the GM of football performance, which is Dan McPherson. So he deals with the coaches and high performance team and analytics. And I'm the GM of football talent, which is recruiting team and contracts and list management strategy. So, the job's a pretty big one. And we felt like we could operate best by dividing up the responsibilities.
So the big question, I guess, if the football department is presenting something to the board, do you both do that or do you do it? How does that work?
Yeah, we both have board involvement. Obviously, got our different areas that we speak to. That works pretty seamlessly.
And just further to Kane's question, he asked to point to a positive in list development or list acquisition over the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, you must sit there, you're struggling to win, and it's always difficult for young players to play well in a losing side. Tell me where you would start to give North Melbourne fans the positives that you see.
Well, I think over the last year and a half, there's been some excitement out on the field with some of our young players that are coming through. It takes time. Clearly, we've seen some other teams go through rebuild phases, and it takes years and it takes experience, and it takes time to get games into these players to develop them. And we're no different. I think there's some signs out there that some players have got some talent and they're going to get even better in the future. But at the moment, it's obviously not leading to wins on the footy field. But, we're seeing some real improvements with some of our youngsters.
So as we all know in footy and right around the world, success has many fathers and failures an orphan. When you sit down to pick out who's going to be your number one draft pick, and you've had some good picks in the recent times, is that a one-man pick? Is it a three-man pick? Who owns that decision? Is the coach involved? How does it translate to picking the number and putting the name next to it?
Yeah, it's quite a process, mate. We obviously fire these players from under 16 level, so we've got some really good knowledge of them by the time they get to the draft in their 18th year. So there's plenty of background there and plenty of football exposure that we've got to make decisions. We collaborate all the time. We have internal debate. We bring in high performance to assess GPS and doctors to assess medical history and injuries, and obviously the coach and risk management committee as well. So it's quite a long process, and there's always a lot of debate to form your draft order as well.
Brady, we really appreciate you coming on. Can I just clear up a couple of things about your number one pick, Jason Horne-Francis? There's a suggestion that he travelled to Adelaide a week ago without the knowledge of the club to see family and management. Is that true?
I've got no idea about that, mate. I don't know where you've got that one from.
Sam Edmund reporting that Jason Horne-Francis missed the round 9 game with Port Adelaide with hamstring tightness after travelling to Adelaide without the club's knowledge.
He certainly missed the game with hamstring tightness. Yes, that's true.
Okay. And is there a reason that you think that he hasn't re-signed with the club yet? Because there was a suggestion that he was going to re-sign before the start of the season.
Well, none of our players have signed from that draft. So it's not uncommon for players to play a season or play even in their second season. We've seen it plenty of times at other clubs that they're in their second season now and still unsigned for the future. So,
yeah, but did you offer him a contract extension?
Jason is contracted to the end of next year. And, at the right time, we hope to extend that. But, we're probably not at that point just yet.
Has the club offered Jason a contract extension?
I don't speak about contract discussions publicly, mate. So, I don't feel like I need to answer that question.
Okay. Brady, we really appreciate you coming on what was a significant day for the footy club. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brady Rawlings there, the GM of football talent at North Melbourne. Plenty to unpack out of that. 133-693 if you're a North Melbourne fan that wants answers or questions. Lee, your gut feel having listened to that?
Well, I was more interested. I must say, the one piece of advice, if ever anyone that I've been involved with asks me they're running for a coaching job, I say, listen, you've got to make sure that you got trust and faith in the CEO and whoever is the head of football. And the fact that there's kind of two heads of football at North seems like you'd think there was at least a head of football, isn't there? Not a joint head of football. So that surprises me. Long way from round 19 last year when they beat Carlton by 39 points. Haven't those two clubs gone in different directions?
More Sports Day with Lee Matthews. He's here for McDonald's right after this.
King! There's those hands again. He's making a difference tonight. That's his third. And now back-to-back goals for Max King. And the Saints are back in front. And they're good. They're scary good, the Saints.
Well, they're fifth on the ladder, Scoop, but tantalisingly, they are equal fourth.
And who's that? The Saints?
The Saints.
Isn't this the Saints? We have to laugh about our industry sometimes, Jerry.
Seven wins, Lee. Three losses.
Wasn't long ago, at the end of last season, the sentiment, Lee, seemed to be, oh, well, the Saints had a really good crack, and it looks like they're just not going to get there, and we're going to have to start again, and the recruits haven't worked. Things change quickly in footy, Lee.
We've got to remind ourselves that footy's different every Monday. Indeed, it is. It was the previous Monday, and next Monday it'll be different than it was last Monday because we're going to have another 9 set of winners and losers. So, yeah, but they actually have got it together. But I think that what has made St Kilda good, I know we're going to speak to Brett Ratton shortly. I mean, whenever they've had Ryder and Marshall at the same time, that's been a real plus for them. And Max King gets getting better by the week, you'd think.
Indeed he is. The bloke who sees him closest than most is Brett Ratton, joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Brett.
Jared, how are you, mate?
I'm going pretty well. How are you feeling this Tuesday after a win? Lee says it changes every Monday. Well, it's probably the same Tuesday after a victory.
Exactly. I think, you know, when you walk into a footy club, you know sort of what's happened on the weekend on that Monday morning. There's some, you know, down faces or there's a big smile. So, you know, the boys did a fantastic job. We didn't play our best footy, but to find a way and, you know, for us to maybe win a bit ugly and not be on our terms, and full credit to Adelaide, but it was really pleasing that we could find a way. And because we, you know, you can't play your best every week, it doesn't mean you have to lose, but it was really pleasing that we did find a way to get that 4 points.
Evening, Rats. How do you go with that principle? It's often said that you'd want to walk into the club Monday morning and not really know whether we won or lost the previous weekend. And, you know, it's a learning environment, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. How much you're able to generate that kind of situation?
It is. We try and keep our emotions pretty level. They say to do that, Lee. And as you know, it's not always possible. But, you know, we sort of really focus just on the process. And yeah, probably on the weekend, we probably didn't get the first part of the game and the process right with the way we were playing. And then we sort of addressed that at halftime and the game changed a bit and away we went and we sort of got into gear and played some, you know, pretty decent footy but towards the end. But yeah, that's a challenge for any team. And for us, it's about sticking to the process.
Brett, well done on the season so far. You would have played with and against some of the game's great forwards. Tell me, when you're watching Max King right now, what are you thinking?
You know, we watch Max really closely and, you know, we probably critique his game harder than anyone. But he's really improving. He's developing physically and mentally as a young man. But, yeah, he's still improving. But what we see is, you know, how he can change a game of football. And sometimes it's not always him marking the ball, but some of those big contests that he creates to bring others into the game is really critical for us. And, you know, his performance on the weekend and, you know, to kick 6 straight, and it wasn't just the 6 straight, it was really at vital times that he did it, which, you know, the team needed it. We were sort of trying to get some momentum, but then, you know, he kicks a sort of 50-metre bomb and, you know, 45-metre bomb on a 45-degree angle. They were big goals and at critical times. So, yeah, that's great leadership development for him to do that in a game and get his reward.
Can I ask you about the observations of a bit of a late bloomer on the other side, Jack Sinclair? He's 27 now. It seems like it's only the last couple of years he's really come under our notice. But, you know, he's become a real weapon with his running and his kicking and his speed.
Yeah, it's sort of probably in my first year, Lee. I didn't play him. It was the COVID year where we all went to the hubs and that. And I actually didn't play him for the first half of that year. He had some things to work on. We spoke regularly about it. And then away he went. We watched one of the scratch matches they put together against Carlton. And he performed exceptionally well, got back in the team. And from that moment onwards, he hasn't looked back. And then his pre-season, he was outstanding. And then last year, he finished second in our best and fairest. And this year, he's, you know, he keeps growing. A lot of it's self-belief. You know, he's gone and worked extremely hard on his game. But, you know, he's really, you know, believing in himself and his ability. And, you know, he's developed into a very fine footballer.
Brett, can I ask you about the soft cap in your footy department? We had John Longmire on last night who I've got to admit, spoke pretty bleakly around how much the footy cuts...
He was flat, wasn't he?
Yeah, have hurt both him as a coach and also his footy department. How much more support do you feel you would need in the perfect world, or are things pretty balanced within the Saints footy department right now?
I think there's always room. I think we've just got to be careful of the workload, not just about the football coaches. It's about our football staff, you know, just to think of physios and you know, the fitness area, the doctors, welfare, all the department, all the areas across the department can get a bit stretched at times. And I think that's maybe the concern with the soft cap at times, that we've just got to be a bit careful we don't burn people out. And, you know, some of the good people of the game who have, you know, got great skill sets just leave the game because they are tired and probably, overworked and underpaid. So trying to get that balance is critical. And I think it's just not around the football coaches. I think it's the balance of all our areas in the football area.
And speaking about being burnt out, we've seen another guy who didn't work out for his first time as a coach in Michael Voss, doing good things at your former mob, the Blues. Is it a reminder to our industry, Brett, that just because it doesn't work out at the first club doesn't mean it won't at the second?
Yeah, I think it is a good reminder. I think it's around, I think people mature, develop. I saw Michael at Icon Park on Sunday. He was there for the reserves, the same as us, and we just had a quick chat. But I know myself, I'm more level emotionally, more balanced as a person, and I think that helps your coaching. I had a lot of energy as a young coach. 36 I started, and I think Michael was about 34 or 35. So I think as you mature, you understand. And, I was very fortunate to be involved with the Hawthorn Football Club with Clarko and some other, coaches there that are now senior coaches in Bevo and Adam Simpson and Chris Fagan. I'm very fortunate. And I'd say Michael would talk about Ken Hinckley the same, as he learned under his tutelage.
You've got some selection issues coming up, Brett, which is fantastic for you. Hunter Clark, Dan Hanbury, Jack Steele, all not playing. Obviously, Steele's going to be out for a period of time. But, at the end of the year, if they're all available, it's a potent midfield and some good players are going to miss out.
Yeah, it is. Even this week, Clark's performance at BFL level was fantastic. And Mitch Owens as well played extremely well. Ryan Burns was the sub and travelled back and had 30-odd possession, played really well. And Dan Butler was exceptional. So we've got players knocking on the door, which is great, and it's putting a lot of pressure. And, we sat down as a match committee and, we bounced a few names, and there's going to be some unlucky boys that miss out, but that's great to see because we haven't had that in the past. So we're really, striving to get better as a group. And, it's going to be interesting if, when Steele gets back and the others as well.
One final one, Brett, and it's off Broadway in many respects, although Nick Rewell put it right in the middle of Broadway. But Sam Fisher is a great of the St Kilda Footy Club, as is Nick Rewell. And Nick was passionate in his plea to the AFL and the Players Association, we've got to do more for guys leaving the industry. Where do you sit on this? You've been around for a long time. You've seen, as I have, people flourish, and unfortunately a small percentage of people go by the wayside, and some dramatically so. Are we doing enough to look after people post their careers?
As a football club, we're working extremely hard. Tony Brown, we've got Jared Jess, we've got Arnie Katrina Amon, that are really trying to help the players, the current players now. The great thing for our football club is the Danny Frawley Centre and what it does for our present players, our past players moving forward, and the community as well. And hopefully with these things in place, we can reach out and support everybody, the present players and the past players. But it is a challenge. It's hard to control everybody in life. But I know Tony Brown is constantly talking to past players and trying to support past players as much as he can. So it is a challenge. Our club, I think, with what Tony's doing and with the Danny Frawley Centre, I think we're trying to put something in place that we can maybe even go further and deeper into their past football careers to try and help out and reach out just to see if they're all right.
Appreciate your thoughts on that particular aspect, Brett, but you've got a great platform to have a great assault on the finals. So thanks for your time tonight. Good luck for the weekend and for the rest of the season.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
Brett Ratten there, the coach of the Saints, joining Jared and Lee.
Now on Sports Day, from the lips of lethal, always keep your head in the zone. Visit makingourfarmsafer.org.au.
Just an example, Jared, that even the best make mistakes. And that's our panel operator, Zoe. There's no one better in the country than her pushing buttons, but she's pressed the wrong one. Lips of lethal. She's blaming Lawrence. Lips of lethal still
need to expose
coming up.
Is it?
Still coming up. It's not yet.
Okay. Well,
and we absolutely had to expose him. We couldn't have it being
Lee's still with us. So, Lee, give us something about your philosophy on free kicks.
my philosophy on free kicks, it's more an observation, Jared, over the decades, right?
Yeah.
I'll just give this quickly. 1970, there was an average of 82 free kicks a game. 1980, average of 72. 1990, it's coming down to 48. 2000, 36. 2010, 38. Now, what I would say, Jared, and we know for a fact, players have got fitter and fitter over the decades. Therefore, they cover more ground. There's more congestion. There's more contact. There's more umpires. But the free kicks have dropped. Now, as Julius Sumner Miller used to say, why is that so?
Well, I reckon they stopped paying the free kicks that they saw and started paying the free kicks to, quote the guy who was running the show at that stage, I think it was Jeff Geeshan, you pay the free kicks that the granny in the grandstand can see, which is a problem because we can see a lot more than her because we see it on TV.
Well, that's a fact. I mean, it's just a strange thing. I mean, the debate about, there was a game last weekend, obviously Hawthorn and the Lions, where there was 63 free kicks, which in the modern era was a lot of free kicks. But I will also say there was 35 goals kicked. It was a magnificent game of football.
Yeah.
35 goals. It came down to the wire. You can never guarantee a close game, but the best games of football are the ones where it's high scoring and close because we want a close contact. And I've always had a view that if you'd say harsh umpiring as opposed to lenient, harsh umpiring makes for a better game. That's always been my kind of general view on it all. Like, you know, we'll go way back, Jared. I'm really going way back here. One of the most spectacular grand finals ever. 1972, Carlton Richmond, 50 goals were kicked.
Yep.
And there were 73 free kicks. So, I mean, I sometimes
only one umpire
wonder,
too.
Only one umpire. But I'm just, it's amazing how they, you can imagine how much more contact is in modern footy compared to a couple of generations ago when you played a bit later than I. But when we played, because players are fitter, therefore they get closer to the ball, there is that much more potential free kicks, one would have to say, now than there was 20 or 30 years ago. But the umpire blows their whistle less. I can have never quite understood that. So this thought that high free kicks are bad for the game, don't buy that at all.
The great Lee Matthews continues with us next when we will have the Lips of Lethal.
Now on Sports Day, from the Lips of Lethal. Always keep your head in the zone. Visit makingourfarmsafer.org.au.
Are you going to have a chat with them out the back?
I reckon this time, Lee, it's over to you. The Blues. How are you making of them? What are you making of the Blues?
Oh, I liked them. I liked them a lot last Friday night, I must say. Like, I just mentioned when we were talking about North Melbourne. I mean, remember round 19 last year.
Yeah.
North Melbourne beat Carlton by 39 points. I mean, that's sort of what now about 10. Anyway, let's forget about North Melbourne. I love the Carlton double whammy, right? In the second quarter, when they had control of the game, they kicked 9-3. I reckon it says something about a team that when they can have a really big quarter like that, clearly they're not going to kick 9 every quarter, but I think that was a really big tick. But on the other side of the coin, in the fourth quarter, when the Swans are back in the game and were in control of the game, and the Swans had 18 inside 50 entries in the last quarter, and they were coming hard, but the Carlton defence kept them to 1-5.
Yep.
So they showed the ability to score. But I didn't think they were outstanding, even by their own standards. I didn't think they were outstanding on the night, but the Swans are a pretty good team, so you wouldn't think they're going to dominate the Swans. But, yeah, the ability to kick 9 when they had control of the game and then to hold the Swans to only 1 in the final term when the Swans had control. They look great. I mean, I think the Wiedering, Doherty, they're just great as a defensive, leading the defence. Kurnow looks like Buddy Mark too. I mean, Buddy's different, isn't he? He's like the big half-forward flanker. He's tall, but he can run, and he's agile at ground level. And Kurnow, Charlie Kurnow's got that look about him too, I reckon. He can take an overhead mark, probably better than Buddy maybe, but he looks like he's a really good mover. Obviously missed a lot of footy, so he looks really exciting. And I reckon about this time last year, my observation was Patrick Cripps had lost 5 yards.
Yep.
Well, he's got him back.
He's found him.
He is now running away from the congested play. The congested play. So he's always had the power and the great ball winning, but his running power, he just looks a completely different athlete than he did 12 months ago. I mean, we know he had some kind of injury, but something was preventing him. It's the re-emergence of the running power. He's always been a strong player, but geez, his running power is elite at the moment. So, no, they're looking really good, Carlton.
Do you think players and clubs should tell the public when a player's champion player's battling like he was last year, do you think they should say he's coping with an injury? Because clearly he was.
Well, to be honest, though, when you're out there, you're out there. I mean,
yeah,
I think
I understand that.
But
that's different from saying he's dealing with an injury.
But then why would you tell your opposition? Why would you give them a free?
Well, because his reputation was being tarnished badly last year. I mean, and I think it was self-evident now that he was dealing with something that was pretty savage.
Yeah, I mean, how transparent do you be with you? I mean, because it wasn't so, like, if he's got a cracked ribs or something, you'd never try to the opposition know about that. But just the fact that he didn't, but what, he had a back fracture or something, Sam and Jared. Is that what he actually had that was somehow?
Yeah, he had a crack in his lower back.
But therefore, he was playing in some pain, was he?
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, his re-emergence this year has been astounding. It's been great.
What about the Cats, Lee?
Well, every time I watched Geelong play, we were down there on Saturday afternoon, and they overwhelmed the Port okay. But I always think for them to be like top four premiership trance, they need Danger and Selwood both at their best still. And Joel obviously is getting into his 30s. And on the, off the back of Tom Mitchell's situation on Sunday, like, he didn't play the week before.
Yep.
Now, I don't know whether, is it coincidence or is there a connection that Tom had the week off but come back and played a terrific game last Sunday. Now, it's interesting, like, and I particularly think that Danger shouldn't be in that category, but maybe Joel, and Geelong do manage their players. I mean, they'll often just have players out managed, right? But is it possible that, given that everyone has a rest in the mid-season, is it possible, Jared, that you think, well, there's some players that potentially, I don't know, through the condition, the GPS, what have you, can be better, even injury-free, but play 19 games instead of 22? In other words, they have a week off, rounds 5 to 7 there somewhere, and another week off rounds 17 to 18, something like that. I wonder if we're coming to the time in footy where, while it happens, it has been happening, it'll happen more often to say, to get the best out of a player. We think 18, 19 games a year in the home and away series is the best for him. Do you reckon it's coming?
I think it's going to emerge, and I think if we end up with more on the interchange bench, let's say the bench goes to 5, well, you could manage people's minutes more, but the mental rest as well as the physical rest of a weekend off as you get into your late mid-30s, which is where we're heading more going to play, I think is going to become a regular occurrence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the one thing we do know, I mean, we can talk about what is going on in the game, the brutality of the modern game, just the speed and the ballistic nature of the modern footballer. They just thump into each other so much just in general. Yeah, play, get tackle hard, be tackled. But off the Tom Mitchell game last Sunday, I did ask myself the question, is it a coincidence or is there a connection between having a week off and then you might be much better for the next month than you would otherwise have been?
Can't get a time back, Lee. I know if you had had a couple of weeks off a year, you'd be still playing, but too late. Your time's done.
Well, we always think, don't we? We always thought we just played every week. And obviously, pre the multiple interchange, you actually were on the ground for the whole time. But I think, as we know now, it's a 22-player game where most of the time, the majority of the 22 players play a lot of match time, 80 or 90%. The odd player might play 100% every now and again. But anyway, that was interesting. I just thought the Danger Selwood example and the Tom Mitchell one last week might have been something to note.
It's now time for a Blue Bet update. Blue Bet's AFL 12-point halftime early payout is available on all games this weekend. T's and C's apply. Gamble responsibly.
The Money Man is back. Welcome, Richard Humberston.
Evening, gentlemen. Well, tomorrow it's the perfect storm. We've got some basketball that comes in at 11 o'clock, which is just right on the time. Do a little bit of work in the morning, fire up the KO, get you through till 2 o'clock. It's beautiful. Now, Golden State can clinch this tomorrow, but Mavericks are favourite. This one's because it's at home, and Punter's just not confident they're going to go 4 and dip Golden State. So you're getting a bit of value If you do like Golden State at $1.96, the Mavs $1.85. And in the outright betting, just quickly, Golden State are your clear favourites to win the whole kit caboodle, $1.60. Boston Celtics, who were very impressive today, $3.25. The Heat, $5.50. And the poor Mavs, $51. So enjoy the basketball tomorrow. But most importantly, gamble responsibly.
Good on you, Richard. Richard Hummerston from Bluebet. Lee, we've got a tribunal happening at the present time. Sam Switkowski up for the chicken wing. What do you expect? The AFL asking for two matches.
Well, like, yeah, I don't think it's one of those things they get sort of four or five or something. I mean, I don't know what you'd get for that in these days in modern footy, Jared. But maybe one or two for the dangerous act, I suppose, is reasonable. Didn't give that one a heap of thought, I got to say.
Okay, well, you had two goes at Lips at Lethal. I just thought we'd squeeze it in late in the third crack. Have a good week, Lee.
Happy to do it. Thanks, guys.
Yes, no, Richo is tomorrow. Jared's back for it. He's pretty pumped. Can I get a couple in tomorrow?
Yeah, have you got any prepared?
No. You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and Wilson Homes. Coming up in a big hour with Jared Healy and Sam McClure, Joel Jeffrey, the round 10 rising star.
Saw his game.
How about his five on the weekend? A couple over his head.
Didn't kick too many normal goals.
He's got some tricks, young Jeffrey.
Yes. Yep.
And he's got one of the great names in the AFL, doesn't he, Jared?
He does.
Joel Jeffrey.
JJ.
And Storm footy boss Frank Benici to join us as he does every week. But let's get into the latest in sport. It's all thanks to Polaris, Australia's number one selling side-by-side brand. And if you listened to us an hour ago, we started with North Melbourne, and for good reason. If you're just tuning in, long-term national recruiting manager Mark Finnegan and player personnel boss, who is also their list manager, Glenn Luff, both resigning today from the club midway through the season. It's come as quite a shock. There has certainly been a lot of debate around North's recruiting, not just the players that they've picked, but also how far they stripped back the list. We're going to talk a little bit more about it. But first, I just want to remind everyone what Caroline Wilson had to say on North Melbourne and their coach David Noble last night on Footy Classified.
The stories coming out of the club about the relationship between the coach and the players are disturbing. It was disturbing last week when news leaked to the Herald Sun about the spray after the Brisbane loss that David Noble had given in players, so bad that he apologised. And there was a... Look, I think that's a problem when players are talking about that stuff, and I'm hearing more and more about players just being a bit disenchanted. These are the stories I was starting to hear at the end of... not the end of last year, but the year before with David Teague. It's just a bit of a worry to me. I'm not saying David Noble's gone. He's only a season
but
and a half.
But in trouble.
But I think he's got a lot of work to do to win back some players.
That's Caro and David Noble, Jared. And then Kane Corns had this to say on the recruiting.
Question, what's one positive list management move they have made in the last 3 years? So North Melbourne's decision to go with a midfielder, Will Phillips, who there's going to be 50 of in the competition. You can get Jai Newcombe in the mid-season draft like a Will Phillips. You had the one opportunity to set up your forward line with Logan McDonald. There's the other mistakes that they've made. Just on the weekend, there's the names that were left out of the side. Callum Coleman-Jones, Stevenson, Bosnalagi was left out as well. So you can't pick players off a computer screen. That's what I'm saying. There needs to be a process with their recruiting and their list management that there hasn't been, because, correct me if I'm wrong, I'd like to know one positive list management move they've made in the last four or five years.
Strong there from Kane.
Yeah, and I think that's a direct crack at Glenn Luff, who's...
Well, he's a list manager, so it is. Yeah.
Well, he's also a champion data background, and suggested...
Oh, okay, the computer screen stuff.
Yeah, to just suggest that Glenn Luff would have picked them straight off a computer and only off a computer, I think, is an insult.
No, Luffy watches a lot of football.
No, that's ridiculous. Implication, if that's where he was going.
I think... I mean, I work with Kane a bit. I haven't had this chat with him, but I think on the surface, Kane's criticism is quite harsh. My perspective on North, as I told you pre-season... When you were quite bullish about him, and I said, I don't know.
Yep.
My sense was I wasn't necessarily critical of who they'd picked. Yeah, of course you can have a crack at Will Phillips. He's had glandular fever, though. We don't really know
He's an unknown entity.
We don't know. No. We don't know. Kane also said at the time that Carlton shouldn't have picked Sam Walsh because he was just another midfielder that
Richmond
was going to play 200 games.
Richmond made a massive mistake by picking Dion Prestia because they weren't in the premiership window.
Yeah.
So we all get it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. My point is about Will Phillips is we don't know yet. I think North have got six or seven talented young players that we don't know enough about yet. My criticism was, well, did they go too young too early. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, they lose Cunnington for unforeseen circumstances and they let Tarrant go. And then all of a sudden...
And Jed Anderson had a slow start.
That's right. And then all of a sudden they're really, really young. And we know that Ben Brown, for different reasons a couple of years ago, left. So it's and as I said to you in the first hour, it's intriguing to me that Mark Finnegan, who you know, we've since learnt has now joined Hawthorn in their recruiting team, and Glenn Luff both walk away when there's been so much chat around its recruiting. There's been so much chat around the coach and whether he's been too harsh on the younger players. I mean, this is now a really intriguing developing story, Jared, because I think a lot of people, when David Noble got there and they started to go young, thought, okay.
Going down the Brisbane route, the
Brisbane
model.
Going down the Brisbane route. David Noble told us that on this show, that they were following that model. Yep. Part of that model wouldn't have been sacking or the resignations of two key people in a rebuild midway through a season.
No, and it's easy to point to the fact that Finnegan is a good man. I know him to some degree, has gone to Hawthorn, but he hasn't gone to Hawthorn as the head recruiting officer, I don't think. So it's... it would appear that he has taken a lesser position. So I think what we can say is this is a club that has got some internal issues. I mean, this is just too coincidental that it comes on the back of public criticism. And you just wonder where they're at right now, North Melbourne, in behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of that's going to be hard to know.
How are you reading it, Scoop?
Well, my gut tells me that there has been some disenchantment between coach and other football staff. Mm. That's my gut. They're getting belted most weeks. I thought they were pretty bloody competitive against Melbourne, but prior to that had been shocking.
Well, there's been a lot of shuffling around in that football department in particular. When you consider, what was it, 3 years ago Glenn Luff was sitting there on draft night. He was head of recruiting.
Rawlings got moved
from Western Australia to come in as the new recruiting manager, as the new head of the list manager.
And he's now head of footy.
No, he's not head of footy.
No, sorry. He's recruiting boss.
He's recruiting
and
talent.
Dan McPherson.
And now Dan McPherson's come over and replaced Brady Rawlings.
And so, they lose Laura Kane to the AFL as well.
And what was Laura's role?
Laura was the key data analyst, I'm pretty sure. She was highly regarded by Brad Scott.
Well, whatever it is, it just reeks of disunity at the moment. Now, I don't know what's going on there.
Disunity is tough at the best of times, but when you're starting a list build from scratch, that is the opposite of what you need. You need everyone on the right part, on the same page.
Yeah, and like success has 1,000 fathers and failure is an orphan, as we know.
Yeah.
And you just wonder whether or not people are starting to look and say, well, you know, who picked this guy? Who picked that guy? Well, not one person picks them. There's always a list management meeting. Yep. Who picked CCC? Callum Coleman-Jones didn't turn up just because one person liked him. Callum Coleman-Jones picked up because, I assume, Noble thought it was a good idea, Luff thought it was a good idea, Finnegan thought it was a good idea. That's the way it works, doesn't it?
Yeah, they all would have been on the same page about stealing Hugh Greenwood.
So you can't start throwing people under the bus.
That's what happens, Jared, though.
What it would
Once
appear,
you get under pressure.
But when you see people leaving mid-season,
it's not good.
That means that things have been untenable for a long, long time.
Yeah, and just on the kids, like I know that people like Kane, and everyone's entitled to their opinion, I love Kane, are going to have a crack at the kids. I like Taron Thomas. I like Simkin. I like Davies Uniacke. I like the number one pick, obviously, they just got Horn Francis.
The Hornet.
Yeah. I like Mackay down back. I like Zerha. I like Larky. I think they've got enough there to build, but I just think that they don't have a good enough bunch of senior players.
No, so, I think that's a fair point.
Zabel's been moved around. And let's be honest about Jack Zabel. He's not the player that he was 5 years ago. That's not a criticism on him. I think he's been a great player over a long period of time. But he's not the player that he was. Todd Goldstein is not the player that he was. And, you know, they tried to trade him several times to Gold Coast and GWS over the last 5 years. Unfortunately, we know what's happened with Cunnington. They haven't got the core group of senior players to strip it back the way that they did. That was my point pre-season, and
yes.
I don't think anything's changed.
No, you can go. I told you so on that one, Scoop.
Let's move on. Hey, can we just revisit Nick Riewoldt's comments about... Yes. We know the unfortunate set of circumstances that surrounded...
Haven't heard them.
Sam
I've seen
Fisher.
Them reported. Didn't see it yet.
Yeah, Sam Fisher, who was part of a sting operation by... I think it was a joint operation between Western Australian Police and Victoria Police. He's on some pretty serious charges that can carry some pretty serious jail time.
What are we talking?
well, years behind bars, okay, depending on how wide a net the conspiracy is. It's around drug trafficking. It's a nasty story. Nick Raywalt was obviously a long-term friend and teammate of Sam Fisher, and he's talked about this quite strongly before, Nick. He's passionate about it, talking about where the illicit drugs code needs to go.
Enough's enough. I think that would be my assertion and my experience, that so many players right now are slipping through the cracks of the AFL system, and when they come out the other side, their lives are ending up in pretty horrific condition. A player's transition out of the game is the greatest issue facing the game. Somewhere along the line, it's not working.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one because I applaud Nick for talking about an issue that a lot of people don't want to touch. The thing for me, Jared, is I'm not positive how much the AFL can do about this.
How much more they can do.
More they can do when we know it is such a large societal issue.
Yeah, well, this is where I don't agree with that, and I don't agree with Paul Marsh. I know we're a subset of society, but so too are the Olympics. And you don't see this issue with the Olympians. The Olympians...
Well, we see drugs and Olympians all the time getting in trouble.
They're doing performance-enhancing drugs. We're talking social drugs here. You don't see the same level of exposure to social drugs in the Olympics movement because...
Well, Jared, it's a bit different, though, because they're competing once every 4 years. These blokes
no, they're
competing
not. They're competing all the time.
Yeah, in world champs and stuff.
But... Exactly. I mean, they're Olympians day in, day out.
Mm.
They assume a different model. They are devoted to their sport day in, day out, as 90% of the footballers are. But there does appear to be this view that if you're a footballer, you can be a part of normal society at the end of the footy season for 4 or 5 weeks, and that may transition into the rest of it. I mean, this is accepted wisdom that we are a subset of the wider community, rather than having Paul Marsh say, well, we shouldn't accept that we're part of the subset of the community. We should be accepting that we are elite athletes, and elite athletes don't put drugs in their system.
Mm.
And that's my bottom line view, that I think we are giving players too easy an out by saying we're a subset of the community. I'd never hear any Olympians say that, not once. And they have their own issues. There's been the odd swimmer get involved in drugs, etc. But the only thing I'd say about Nick, I mean, I was involved very heavily with the Players Association's past player fund that dealt out money for people who are in trouble. And when I first started off, it was joint issues, bad backs, bad knees, bad
hips,
etc. Yeah. People had fallen on hard times. And a lot of people fall on hard times. Doesn't matter whether you had a good AFL career or not. Things go wrong in people's lives, as we know. Then it moved into drug abuse. And unfortunately, drug abuse became probably the largest subset. Unfortunately, in the last 4 or 5 years, I resigned last year, it became a lot of concussion.
Yep.
So the concussion and the drug abuse probably had an equal representation. But that said, you know, for everyone that's a problem, there's a lot who come out and get on with their life.
Yep. So, in principle, I absolutely agree with everything you're saying. And I think it's the right moral stand to take, in that we are professional athletes. We need to be above society. We're paid well above societal expectations. Mm. We need to act above it. What I'm saying to you is, realistically, when you've got however many draftees at 17 and 18 coming into the competition every single year, coming from very different backgrounds...
Yeah.
It's going to be very hard to educate them to a point where if you stuff up, then there are big ramifications.
Well, there aren't ramifications. That's the problem.
Well, but there are, though, Jared.
No, they're not.
They've got the strike policy. They've
well,
got,
the strike
see,
policy
see
is
the
as
doctor,
Nick,
the club finds
no,
out
but
after
as
the
Nick,
second strike.
As Nick said,
they've actually tied it up.
There are too many holes in that policy.
Yeah.
You end up, if you have 3 strikes, you end up in education. So when was the last time you heard of somebody on the back page of the Herald Sun, or the Age for that matter, Scoop, being exposed for taking illicit drugs?
Well, yeah.
When was the last time?
No, I can't remember one.
Well, but this is the issue.
But I think it's a good thing that we don't do that, Jared. I mean, what are you trying to do to ruin these guys' lives?
No,
because
I'm not,
they've got a drug addiction, to plaster them on the back page of the paper. That'll help.
Well, I think it does help.
Well, no, it'll help with the next bloke that
exactly
wants to think about it. Yeah, I agree that. But But
this is the point. I mean,
what are we trying to achieve? What are we trying to achieve?
We're trying to achieve a result where the kids aren't taking drugs.
Yeah, but kids are going to take drugs.
But that's because they're given the green light to. Because people keep saying we're part of a subset of society.
No, it's because that people that aren't playing footy are going to take drugs. And people who aren't playing footy, who are friends with people playing footy, I mean, just anyway.
I go back to my Olympian model. When you walk in and you're trying to be a 17-year-old Olympian, you don't go out and say, I'm a part of society, so therefore, in my 4 weeks off, I'm going to get on the gear. Because they don't have 4 weeks off. They're Olympians 365 days of the year.
Yeah, but our players do have
exactly.
Large
and what do
off.
They do? What do they do? They do what the previous generation did and the generation before. I got 4 weeks off. Let's go to LA. Let's get on it. Used to be beer. Used to be wine. Then it was Coke. Now it's whatever they're taking.
Well, it used to be weed.
It used to be weed.
Yeah.
So, but there's this expectation, I think, that you go hard or go home in your time off.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
And that expectation has to change.
Fair enough. More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy. If you're moving house, call your local energy retailer, Red Energy. And for Wilson Homes, celebrating the biggest cash discount ever. We love speaking to the rising stars every week, Jared. We always get something different, but I've been extra excited to speak to this man because Joel Jeffrey kicked 5 on the weekend for the Gold Coast Suns.
I was there.
And I'm not sure one of them was a regular goal. They were all highlights.
I don't know if he can kick the ball 20 metres out straight in front because we didn't see that on the weekend.
But he kicked the ball over his head, though.
He can do that. He did that magnificently on the weekend. I'll take it back to Ballarat.
Yep.
12:30, had a meeting with the coach, Stuart Yu. Walked into the club room, sat down with him, and he pointed out the forward line. And
you did?
I did,
nice.
Indeed. Yep. So we had a little briefing and a bit of a pre-game chat as to what he was hoping to do.
Was this on air?
No, this wasn't on air. This was backgrounding.
Nice.
And the name Jeffrey was on the board, and I said, tell me about Joel Jeffrey.
And?
He said, I'll just let Joel Jeffrey speak for itself, but let me say he could do anything today.
Nice.
With that in mind, we welcome Joel Jeffrey to the studio. Joel, welcome to you.
Thanks, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Geez, the coach gave you a nice old pump up before the game. You didn't let him down, did you?
Nah. Gave me good credit before the game, pumped me up, which was pretty stoked with. And then, thankfully, backed it up.
You backed it up indeed. You were actually exciting. You were exhilarating. You were all manner of stuff. The question is, Joel, can you back it up next week?
Yeah, we head to Darwin this weekend and play Hawthorn. So
you got the black shorts on in Darwin. I mean, everybody up there is going to be saying, Joel's coming back to town. We're going to get out to see him. Is the pressure going to be too much?
Nah, not really, man. I just want to play in front of family and friends. Can't wait to get up there and play in the hot weather. So keen as.
What was your best goal?
Oh.
So you just had to think about it. There were that many good ones.
So many good ones, yeah.
Yeah, I did a few back before I got drafted, the ones over my head in local footy back home. So, yeah, I did quite a few of them. So, to pull it off in an AFL game was unreal.
Yeah, I must admit, I love that one, but I like the one when you just grabbed it with one hand and swung it around the corner. That, to me, was a ripper.
Yeah, that's the one when Caelan Daniel grabbed it off the ground.
Yeah.
All I remember was just picking up the floor and my teammates are calling for the hand and I couldn't obviously give the hand, so I just swam around, chucked it on the boot and went in.
You're not going to handball though, surely?
Nah.
No, just don't worry. No need to be handball. If you're within 30, just go for it yourself. This handball, it's KB worked it out early in the piece. If in doubt, don't handball.
Yeah, sure.
So, Joel, can you just talk to us about what you were mentioning before about playing in front of family and friends? Like, you're going up to Darwin, you've got 2 weeks there. Oh. It's part of Sir Doug Nicholls' round. It must be hard on a regular basis playing away from family and friends. How special is this next fortnight going to be for you?
Yeah, no, it's very special. I've been thinking of this game for the past 2 weeks. It just gives me goosebumps just thinking about it, going back home, playing on the ground of growing up playing on. Which is my home soil, and to play an AFL game in front of my family and friends is a dream come true for me, and to wear the Indigenous jersey as well again up there, because it's a very strong Indigenous population in Darwin, so there'll be, I'm guessing a healthy crowd there, so looking forward to it.
Jared, just imagine how the Jeffries clan is going to feel when he gets his first touch. On Saturday, he gets the Hawks. And if he's inside 50, imagine the sound, the heart rates, the cheers.
Joel, can I take you back to the 80s? There was a bloke called Warwick Kappa playing. You ever heard of Warwick Kappa?
Yeah, 100%, yep.
When I played at St Mary's with Warwick, there was about 12,000 people there. When Warwick was at the left of screen goals, 10 of the 12,000 people were at that end.
They moved.
At quarter time, they all moved to the other end. And I got a funny feeling, Joel, we're going to see a similar thing happen on the weekend when you front up at the Joel Jeffrey end. No. There's going to be a big crowd waiting for you to entertainment. This is the stuff that makes people want to come to the footy. And I was absolutely rapt that you were able to do it in front of everybody at Ballarat.
Yeah, no, bloody hell. It's the biggest cross that happened. Looking forward to it.
I tell you what, it was an interesting game. You probably should have lost by six, but you kept on having a dig, and the Dogs' inaccuracy kept you in it, and you nearly pinched it off them.
Yeah, like I said before, we just didn't give up. David Swallow, he was unreal.
He
kept us in the game. He's a hard player, and we love playing with him. He set me up a couple of times with goals, so can't thank him enough for that, but... Yeah, we stayed in the game, didn't give up, just missed opportunities we normally take, just didn't happen on the day.
Joel, well done on your round 10 performance. You're continuing to light it up, and I can't wait for you to go home, see family and friends, and put on a show in Darwin over the next couple of weeks, starting on Saturday against the Hawks. Thanks for coming on, and look forward to chatting soon.
No worries. Thanks, fellas. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Good on you, Joel. Looking forward to the weekend's game and the fortnight in the Northern Territory. Oh, fantastic. It was really enjoyable to see. It's a great game, actually, that particular one. Dogs should have won by six or seven, but they kept on having a dig, which is probably more important than the 4 points.
Have you been up to Darwin to see AFL games?
I have, many times.
Right. Yeah, I still haven't got there.
Yep. No, it's a good venue.
Everyone tells me it's such a special place.
It's a good venue, yeah. It's a great place to live. My mum and dad lived up there for 2 years. I didn't get up there, but yeah. Dad set the TAB up in Darwin.
Really?
Yeah, many years ago.
I didn't know that.
When I was about 17, I was left in charge of the Healy household in Edithvale.
And then you got drafted.
Went rampant, yeah.
More sports day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy in Wilson Homes. Frank Panisi joins us on the line, Jared, in just a couple of seconds, as he does every week. And since you left, you put the Moz on the Fremantle Dockers. They can't get near it. You've also put the Moz on Frank Storm. They've suffered back-to-back losses. The good news is, well beaten 36-6 against North Queensland in Townsville. The good news is they still remained in second place on the ladder.
Well, I was up there and the monkey started chirping late on the weekend, and it was all about the Melbourne Storm. But wiser heads are telling me that six regular starters weren't there. Bit of a lack of cohesion in attack. Yep. And it was probably a couple of losses that they needed to reset. Let's find out, though, what the Godfather thinks. Frank, welcome to you.
Hey, Jared, welcome back.
Thank you very much. The beauty about having a win, Frank, is you always remember how bad a loss is. And the beauty about having a loss is that it reminds you that you've got to work harder to have a win.
Yeah, look, I think it's two things. I mean, we always talk about performances and then results, and obviously when you ever lose, you're disappointed. But I think what's disappointed us most the last 2 weeks, especially on Saturday night, was our performance. It was below par. And, yeah, you could find plenty of excuses why we're not at our best at the moment. You know, you've mentioned a few injuries and a bit of illness in the camp last week with the flu, but I think they're just excuses that... Where we always talk about the next man up and a bit of resilience, and we didn't show any of that on Saturday night.
Harder to show resilience when you got a lot of senior players missing, though, Frank.
Yeah, look, in terms of trying to win games, it certainly makes it more challenging, Sam. There's no doubt about that, especially we've played two really good teams in the last 2 weeks. They are the best two teams over the last few weeks in Penrith and the Cowboys, who surprised everyone this week. But it was, as I said, the performance let us down. We're far more competitive than that. And over the years, when we've had a lot of players out, like we've had the last 2 weeks, where we feel we've put on far more competitive performances than we have. So, well, they're disappointed. The players are hurting, and we've at least got only 5 days to turn around on Thursday night.
Well, that's the beauty of football. Unless you're in the grand final or your last game of the year, there's always next week. And it's a short week. You've got Manly. Arch rivals, they're looking to bounce back as well.
No Tommy Turbo though, Jared. It's good news for us.
That is good news. We like no Tommy. What's the focus? When do you go from getting a whack for being so poor to getting, okay, let's get stuck in?
Oh, I think we got rid of that pretty quickly. I think Craig spoke pretty hard to the boys after the game. We only had a short turnaround up there. We flew out pretty quickly after the game, which was good to get back home. And look, we reviewed the game yesterday. We've moved on. I think that's, you know, can't worry too much about it. But I think the best part about it, as you said, Jared, we can get on the field very quickly on Thursday night against a team that we've had a fierce rivalry for a long, long time. And, you know, a team that finished in the top four last year, I should say, and high hopes this year. So it's a big game for them, but it's bigger for us.
Not only were your losses a talking point in the world of rugby league, your tackling technique again has been put under the microscope.
I think our biggest biggest issue with our tackling last week was the lack of tackling. Yeah, that was our biggest problem. So, look, there was a little bit of commentary up there apparently yesterday. There was a couple of tackles that the Cowboys players were injured. That's rugby league, unfortunately. It's any contact game. The game is that fiercely monitored these days, both on the field with the bunker. The bunker saw nothing wrong with either tackle. The match review committee saw nothing wrong with it the day after. And then yesterday, you get an email with what they call concerning acts if there's anything in the game that they're worried about. We didn't even get any of those. So I just think, as I said, the only issue we have with our tackling was our low effectiveness. So that's our major concern, is improve our tackling.
But it does give me an interest into the focus of Sydney, which is the Sydney media, which is the home of rugby league. And this, you know, it's almost like a tired old byline about the tackles. Can't they come up with something a little bit more original, Frank? They were leg tackles. They were pretty standard. There was nothing in them. And yet it still makes news because someone's looking for a headline.
Yeah, it does, Jared. Probably for the first time, we haven't minded it this week, because what it's done is taken the focus off our performance. So we'll let them run with it. And so, you're right. It's got absolutely no legs whatsoever. Pardon the pun, the story, but we'll let them run with it. And as I said, it takes the focus of how poorly we played last Saturday night. So on this particular occasion, we'll run with it as well.
Frank, great to have you on. Good luck Thursday night.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Jared.
Frank Panisi there, boss of the Melbourne.
So it's just it's the classic football season scenario, isn't it?
What's that?
I mean, it's very rare you go through like last year, 18 wins in a row or whatever it turned out to be. But, you know, there's ups and there's downs. There's good months. Melbourne are going through this incredible winning run, but you look at Brisbane, they go down to Tasmania and they get beaten by the Hawks. Fremantle, on fire, lose two in a row. It's just the ebbs and the flows. The only issue is when you've got a super team in the competition like Melbourne, it takes away a little bit of the excitement of it.
Was it Greg Chappell who always used to say in a cricket match, no matter how one-sided or how comfortable a team looks, just add two quick wickets?
Yeah, I think it was Greg.
And see what happens?
Yeah.
It's sort of like that across most sports.
Absolutely.
Things can be cruising as beautifully as you like.
Yep.
Throw in two quick events that you weren't ready for.
Two quick injuries and two losses.
Yep. Or two wickets.
And you're under the pump.
You're under the pump. More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy in Wilson Homes. Earlier tonight, Jared, myself and Lee Matthews caught up with the coach of the Saints, Brett Radden, Brady Rawlings, and he joins us live on Sports Day. Brady, we really appreciate your time. The obvious question is, why would all three decide to leave today?
Well, it's been happening for a couple of weeks in discussions since. It's not quite right that, all have made a decision today. So I'd like to put that out there straight up. That's untrue. And all three are in different situations. We've had Ben Berthasel, a recruiting officer, he's been studying over his time at the footy club. He's wanted to get in HR. He got an opportunity presented to him 2 or 3 weeks ago from a recruitment firm. And he's decided to take up that opportunity, which is a great opportunity for Ben. It's for what he's been studying towards for a number of years now while he's been working with us. So it's not entirely true what you spoke about at the start of that segment.
So which bit isn't true, that the three of them haven't left at the same time?
They're all three of different scenarios. So we've got Mark Finnegan's been approached by another club, which he's been weighing up. That decision for 3 or 4 weeks now, and I've been in constant contact with him working through that.
Seems very coincidental, Brady, that it all happened in the one day. What was the reason Glenn Luff left?
So Glenn did inform us today of his resignation. So he's a great operator, Glenn. Loved his time working here with me. and for us, and he's decided to pursue other opportunities. So that's probably more of a question for Glenn than for me, Jared.
So is it a happy recruiting department at the present time? Because it seems extraordinary, Brody, that you know three people leave on the cusp of a mid-season draft, and apparently they've all tendered their resignation as operative as today.
Yeah, so on the cusp of the mid-season draft, we're really well prepared for that. There's nothing that's going to change between now and next Wednesday that's going to affect anything we do for mid-season. Obviously, we'll be picking in the first couple of picks, given our ladder position and our one list spot that's free. So we've gone through the interviewing stage, the football assessment. We're really well placed there. So that won't be affecting anything that we do for next week.
So, Brady, can I just ask you, so North Melbourne fans would be sitting here listening tonight thinking we're 1-9 after we've probably watched our team go backwards rather than forwards in the second year of a rebuild. And the criticism, or the strong criticism, certainly in the media, I mean, you would have heard the comments of Kane Corns last night, has been around the recruitment. And, you know, more than half of your recruiting department have left. I take it on face value that they're all three separate situations, but midway through a season is not an ideal set of circumstances for a team that is trying to go forward and not back.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever an ideal timing for when you lose staff. It's always a challenge. We've had two staff members that have been approached, one through another AFL club and one through a completely different industry, which he'd been studying for. So Ben 100% went with my blessing. I've been working with him around that. He's in his early 30s. He hasn't had a weekend off during a footy season for 12 years. So I totally get that he'd like to look at a different opportunity in a different industry. He's unfortunately went through the COVID period where people have been stood down and stood back up and back to part-time, given the nature of the soft cap cuts. And he's probably looked at a more stable environment being in a recruitment firm rather than a football club.
Can I take you back to Kane Corns' comments last night on Footy Classified? Just take a listen.
You can't pick players off a computer screen. That's what I'm saying. There needs to be a process with their recruiting and their list management that there hasn't been, because correct me if I'm wrong, I'd like to know one positive list management move they've made in the last 4 or 5 years.
So pretty savage stuff from Kane, saying you're only picking guys off a computer screen and no process behind it. Can you convince the North Melbourne fans that that's not as simplistic as it sounded?
I think we all know that, Jared, except for probably one person. So, there's that much that goes into picking football players. The amount of games our scouts go to, the coverage across the nation, whether it be underage, state leagues, in all different states, school football, and that's just the football assessment. Obviously, there's a lot more to football than the way he plays football. Yep. There's the character side of things, which we interview, we do background checks in schools, in jobs, just like every other club does. And clearly, Kane hasn't seen how a football environment works in that area.
Brady, can I just ask you a question? On the sort of chart in the media guide, there's a few people there with GMs of this, GMs of that. Who is the head of football? Are you the head of football at North?
So, Lee, the role's changed a little bit at certain clubs, and you see some of the most successful clubs have split the role. It's a big job. And so we've made the change to split it into two roles. One's the GM of football performance, which is Dan McPherson. So he deals with the coaches and high performance team and analytics. And I'm the GM of football talent, which is recruiting team and contracts and list management strategy. So, the job's a pretty big one. And we felt like we could operate best by dividing up the responsibilities.
So the big question, I guess, if the football department is presenting something to the board, do you both do that or do you do it? How does that work?
Yeah, we both have board involvement. Obviously, got our different areas that we speak to. That works pretty seamlessly.
And just further to Kane's question, he asked to point to a positive in list development or list acquisition over the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, you must sit there. You're struggling to win, and you know it's always difficult for young players to play well in a losing side. Tell me where you would start to give North Melbourne fans the positives that you see.
Well, I think over the last year and a half, there's been some excitement out on the field with some of our young players that are coming through. It takes time. Clearly, we've seen some other teams go through rebuild phases, and it takes years, and it takes experience, and it takes time to get games into these players to develop them. And we're no different. I think there's some signs out there that some players have got some talent, and they're going to get even better in the future. But at the moment, it's obviously not leading to wins on the footy field. But we're seeing some real improvements from some of our youngsters.
So as we all know in footy and right around the world, success has many fathers and failure's an orphan. When you sit down to pick out who's going to be your number one draft pick, and you've had some good picks in the recent times, is that a one-man pick? Is it a three-man pick? Who owns that decision? Is the coach involved? How does it translate to picking the number and putting the name next to it?
Yeah, it's quite a process, mate. We obviously fire these players from under 16 level, so we've got some really good knowledge of them by the time they get to the draft in their 18th year. So there's plenty of background there and plenty of football exposure that we've got to make decisions. We collaborate all the time. We have internal debate. We bring in high performance to assess GPS and doctors to assess medical history and injuries, and obviously the coach and risk management committee as well. So it's quite a long process, and there's always a lot of debate to form your draft order as well.
Brady, we really appreciate you coming on. Can I just clear up a couple of things about your number one pick, Jason Horne-Francis? There's a suggestion that he travelled to Adelaide a week ago without the knowledge of the club to see family and management. Is that true?
I've got no idea about that, mate. I don't know where you've got that one from.
Sam Edmund reporting that Jason Horne-Francis missed the round 9 game with Port Adelaide with hamstring tightness after travelling to Adelaide without the club's knowledge.
He certainly missed the game with hamstring tightness. Yes, that's true.
Okay. And is there a reason that you think that he hasn't re-signed with the club yet? Because there was a suggestion that he was going to re-sign before the start of the season.
Well, none of our players have signed from that draft. So it's not uncommon for players to play a season or play even in their second season. We've seen it plenty of times at other clubs that they're in their second season now and still unsigned for the future. So,
yeah, but did you offer him a contract extension?
Jason is contracted to the end of next year, and at the right time we hope to extend that. But we're probably not at that point to share.
Has the club offered Jason a contract extension?
I don't speak about contract discussions publicly, mate. So I don't feel like I need to answer that question.
Okay. Brady, we really appreciate you coming on what was a significant day for the footy club. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brady Rawlings, they're the GM of football talent at North Melbourne. Plenty to unpack out of that. 133-693 if you're a North Melbourne fan that wants answers or questions. Lee, your gut feel having listened to that?
Well, I was more interested. I must say, the one piece of advice, if ever anyone that I've been involved with asked me they're running for a coaching job, I say, listen, you've got to make sure that you got trust and faith in the CEO and whoever is the head of football. And the fact that there's kind of two heads of football at North seems like you'd think there was at least a head of football, isn't there? Not a joint head of football. So that surprises me. Long way from round 19 last year when they beat Carlton by 39 points. Mm. Haven't those two clubs gone in different directions?
Great to hear from Rats. And they've put themselves in a position, Jared, that if they can win the games they need to, they're a genuine chance to steal a spot in the four.
I agree with that, Scoop. It's amazing how people's views change. Last year, it was evidently proof that their recruiting was poor.
Yep.
This year...
They were calling for heads to roll.
That's right. This year, it's proof that it worked.
Mm.
And in 2 weeks, if they lose two in a row, we'll have another look at it.
That does us for this Tuesday night on Sports Day. Jared and I will be back. Yes, No, Richo with Jared's return tomorrow.